June, reconvening the May 12, 2005 public hearing relating to House Bill 5077. Director Weeks, I believe we ended up on page 11 of the handout.
Yes, sir.
We can just continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Gary Weeks, Director of the Department of Human Services, and we're on page 11. I'm going to talk about some savings that RENG, Office of Medical Assistance Program, specifically around HIV and transplant drugs. This particular item here, there's a general fund savings, you can see, of $1.3 million. The savings comes because these drugs are for clients who formerly were part of OHP, they were eligible for OHP, as a part of the medically needy group. When we did away with that, we now have transferred some of the costs to what's called the Ryan White Grant, which is not general fund, and the grant is now paying some of the costs for these HIV and transplant drugs and relieves the general fund of $1.3 million. The Ryan White grant pays for about half of the savings in the 1.3. The other half is due to lower costs for these drugs than what we expected. So that's how we come to the $1.3 million in savings.
Okay, is there any effect on the delivery of services or drugs or anything relating to the HIV population?
Mr. Chairman, this doesn't affect the number of individuals that are served. You know, we're able to use Ryan White money instead of the general fund money. And what we effectively did when we stopped the medical needy program is we got a general fund appropriation to take care of these people. Now we're using some of the Ryan White grant money, all of it actually, to pay for this. And then we have some lower costs because we have fewer demand for these right now.
And so it doesn't affect the population, and it doesn't affect the delivery of services to the population, to the HIV.
That's my understanding from our staff. So.
Mr. Britton.
Mr. Chair, not to jump too far ahead, but there is also a related issue with respect to HIV drugs a little bit later that Mr. Weeks will get to, and that's on page 13. So.
Okay.
Yeah, right. We'll get to that. It's not to be confused. These are two different populations of eligibles and stuff.
So. Right.
All right. Thank you.
I'll try to separate those when we get to page 13. The next issue here is what we call the recoupment or the recovery of indirect medical education dollars. These are dollars that go to our DRG, diagnostic-related group, teaching hospitals, and there are four or five teaching hospitals that get these education monies. These are formula-driven resources that go to the teaching hospitals. The formula is based on admissions to the hospitals. We've had an error how much we calculated to the extent that we actually paid more than we needed to, so we've recovered some of the general fund money in that sense. And then the other part of this recovery, which saves us general fund, is that we had some facility outlier payments that we recovered. Facility outlier payments are payments that exceed a certain threshold that we have for payments, and therefore we apply a formula to those, and we pay that way because they're outliers. Well, we've recovered some money from that program, and so together we've got a $1.09 million in savings from those two sources. The next issue is pretty straightforward. These are third-party recoveries and audit recoveries. Third-party recoveries in OMAP are where we go after private insurance carriers, and we've paid the bill. The client has private insurance coverage. We go after the private insurance carrier, and we recover from the private insurance carrier. The audit recoveries are overpayments to providers that we identify as part of an audit process. So. The two aren't a lot of money, but it amounts to $1.4 million in savings in the general fund. The next item is a 1.9 savings that we have in what are called professional services. and those are contracts that we have with providers for looking at disease management, oversight, prescription, drug management services. The reason we have lower costs here on this is because we've had delays in putting these contracts together and getting them online. The result is that we paid out less for the vendors of the disease management oversight and the prescription drug management service. So it's pretty straightforward. Had we come online in the time we thought, we would have spent all the resources. The next item is relates to the state hospital and to Ward 48. This is the adolescent ward. We have closed the adolescent ward, and in fact, yesterday about 11 o'clock, the last adolescent left the state hospital. We have transferred those individuals to the farm home, which is in Corvallis. It's part of the Trillium group, and they have modified a new facility. The children are there. That saved $300,000 in general fund, which we are now using to expand the capacity at the state farm home. So the goal for us for some time has been to get kids out of the state hospital. There are no more adolescents in the state hospital now, so we think this is a very good outcome.
Okay. Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On this sheet, there should be a $300,000 savings. Okay, just fine.
This should come over here. Well, it's we're gonna use that $300,000 at the farm home.
All of it.
So it's being shipped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You need to introduce yourself. It's just a shift in our savings. We've moved to the farm home because we have to pay the farm home for taking the children.
Right. So there's no effect on the rebalance. It's merely for information purposes. It's
right.
Being shifted.
We're identifying for you that we closed the adolescent ward. And we talked about this before with the emergency board, but it felt like we had pointed out. And the $300,000 is going to cover the cost of care and getting the facility, the farm home, ready for these children. We have other savings of about $8 million in community-based facilities. Now, we have been trying to open these community-based facilities to move people out of the state hospital and into local community areas. We haven't been able to open as many as we had hoped, at the speed we had hoped, and the issues are construction problems, candidly, some issues around siting in neighborhoods. I think Senator Mona Sanderson is aware of one of those cases. We finally pulled out of that spot, as you may know, Senator, because of the resistance from the neighborhood. So it's construction delays and neighborhood sitings and looking for really suitable sites. So that, because we've pushed that off, saves about $8 million. Now, that's a savings that it's sort of discomforting, I'll tell you honestly, in a way, because we need those community options up so we can move people out of the institutions into the community.
But okay, so it frees up the $8 million for this biennium, but the need will take
right.
Go into the next biennium.
And we're on. We're on.
I think you'll also find in the budget that we didn't have savings what we'd hoped for at the state hospital because of that. So it's, I know what you're trying to say. So it's savings, but it's not what savings we want to make.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, it's. I don't want to portray it as the savings that I'm excited about. We didn't get these built as quickly as we intended to. So there are about 32 of these facilities that we had hoped to have up that are now still in process. So,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Winter.
How many do you have of the 32?
Well, there's 32 placements that have been delayed.
Okay.
So that's how many we're working on at this point. We've got a schedule for when they're coming up. We can get that to you, Senator, if you'd like.
I would, thank you. Okay.
And Mr. Chair.
Sure, Senator.
Yes, thank you. Just to give the committee a little bit of background on the facility, the community siting that I was hoping would happen in Gresham, I think we have to remember that there are a lot of people that are saying, not in my backyard. And so that's what we ran into. And the company, this would be would have been a private entity who has a very good history elsewhere in caring for the mentally ill. And it's just too bad that there's such a fear in the communities of the situation, you know, of sightings that could really fit in very well into the community. But there's a lot of education that has to be done with council members, city council members, let alone the public at large. So, and the fact that there's been how many cited from Damish? I think you said there's been 800 placements with the closing of Damish.
Senator Mona Sanderson, something like that. Barry would have the number. Would you like?
800 is not the number of actions that
And so far, there have really been no repercussions of the placement of those 800 in the community, and so that's all I wanted to relay.
Okay, thank you, Senator Bates.
You know, we've had the same problem in our in Southern Oregon too with some sightings, and but we've gotten past that, and people are comfortable now. Some of these are forensic patients, which causes people to have some fears,
mm-hmm.
but it's gone well. We've had no problems, and I expect we won't have any. You guys are being very careful, and you're being very cautious, and I appreciate that. We don't want anything blowing up on us, and I think you're doing the right thing. If you haven't quite made your schedule, I'm not too concerned. This is a very touchy thing to do, and something new for the public to get used to, and once that barrier is gone, I think you'll be able to move forward a lot easier.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, I agree, and I think we're learning over time more and more about how to deal with neighborhoods. And maybe this gets to Senator, you were suggesting that too. You know, how do you approach the neighborhood? How do you provide the right assurances? How do you get them ready to accept place a home that's going to have some people that, that potentially could be threatening? So,
Mr. Chair,
more about how to do that.
Mr. Chair, as the community who has hosted all of these issues, whether you're talking corrections or state hospital or mental health, perhaps some of us who live in our community can come and assist you in your community, recognizing that you know, there are some real values of having the interaction with individuals, whether they're mentally ill and back in their community. So I'd be very glad to come and talk to them, folks in your communities. We've had a history for a lot of years here in Salem, and I think sometimes that's why those of us in Salem tend to be the first on board when we talk about interaction with state agencies and doing such things as relief nurseries and those kind of community participations, and because we've grown up with it.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. Representative Henson.
Just to quickly jump on this same train. The two neighborhoods I'm familiar with in Portland that were the most critical of group home type sightings, and a lot of the concern was with the proliferation of group homes in a particular neighborhood, it can drive the housing values down. It's Northwest Portland and Elliott. The two areas, so I'm starting to come up with a real estate concept that if you really want to invest in real estate, find out where the group homes are locating, and those are going to be the hottest neighborhoods around, because those incredible housing prices and jumps in those two neighborhoods over the last 20 years.
Well, I thought I was going to say, I come from a neighborhood that's so bad that the group homes wouldn't locate there.
Well, that can happen. I mean, if group homes aren't willing to locate in a neighborhood, the chance for a neighborhood turnaround is probably a few years off yet. And we've had that situation in my district also.
Mr. Chairman, the next adjustment we made was one to the state fiscal year 2004. We picked up some federal funding at the state hospital in Eastern Oregon Psych Center that we hadn't counted on. It's a little under $1 million adjustment, so saves us that much in general fund. Switching to public health, the next item is a $20 million federal fund item, and this has to do with the WIC program. WIC is, I think as you probably all know, federally funded. We're asking for an increase in federal fund expenditures here for the WIC program, and the increase of $20 million is caused in a couple of ways. One, by the increase in cost of food package prices, and our client enrollment. So having more people take advantage of the WIC program, paying a little bit more for packaged foods in the WIC program. It's a it's a very good program, and you know, we need to take advantage of it as much as possible. No general funds are associated with this program. Then we have, again, in public health, and I'm glad Senator Carter's here because he sent me a note about this. We have some surplus money, some other fund revenues, and a couple of programs that, if we didn't use, would be carried forward. And those are in HIV, the HIV program, the drug rebate program, and this is what Mr. Breton mentioned to you all a minute ago. We have about $3.2 million in HIV drug program money that's unused. If we didn't use it, it'll roll over into the next biennium. And I think it's the belief of the HIV community, advocacy groups, and others that we should let this roll forward, that there may be a greater need for the money in the next biennium. And I mean, I've talked myself a few times with Thomas Berner about this. They believe that there also is some potential impact on the Medicaid Modernization Act that may require a need for these. And Senator Carter, you had asked me about about this, and I've had long conversations and email exchanges with Thomas, and I really respect his position. We felt we needed to get the budget rebalanced. We think that, in fact, the Medicaid Modernization Act may make available some prescription services that aren't now available to people who need these HIV drugs. So we made it part of the rebalance, and we did that knowing that there is some discomfort about that. The other revenues that are carry forward if we didn't spend them are medical marijuana fee revenues, which are about $1 million more than what we're expecting, and then revenues that we take in from our vital records program, which are about $500,000 more than expected. So that,
okay, now just to make sure that there's complete clarification on the record, when we're talking about the HIV drug rebates, the utilization of these funds will not deprive anyone in this population group of any benefits or prescription, and it would just be rolling over into the next biennium if it weren't utilized.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I mean, people are getting the right now that what they have is a balance, and it would be an ending fund balance, and it would be continued and available in the next biennium if we didn't use it for this purpose. Okay. And so it's a difficult choice to make.
If there's adequate funds in the next biennial budget,
Mr. Chairman, I think that's something that's a question to HIV advocacy organizations, that there's a belief that this could be used, could be necessary in the next biennium. At this point, we don't know that for sure. We think that because of the Medicaid Modernization Act, there may be some prescription drug availability that next biennium that's not available now, Mr. Chairman. So, but for the balance of this biennium, we are not taking anyone off the program. We are not limiting their drug use. We are using this as an ending balance, and that's a policy decision, frankly, to make.
Is there any intention in DHS to cut back the program or availability of services in the next biennium?
Mr. Chairman, there is not.
Okay, thank you.
Any intention to do that. So anyway, you have these three balances that would be ending balances: HIV drug rebates, Medicaid, medical marijuana, and vital fee records. All revenue sources, all carried forward if they're not used as a part of this rebalance. Now we're getting to the end here. We've got the department-wide support.
I need clarification. I just want to make sure you're saying that this money is going to stay intact. And I think
Mr. Chairman, Senator Mona Sanderson, if it is not used in the rebalance, if you would choose to not include it, it will roll forward and be available in the next biennium.
Okay.
If you accept the plan as presented, it would be used. These balances would be used to
balance
the rebalance.
Okay. Well, let's go back then to the HIV patients in Cascade AIDS Project. They have a number of patients that are taking advantage or use certain monies, and I just want to know if it's the monies here for their HIV drugs. They are not eligible for the Oregon Health Plan, and we have provided money for their medication. is this that money?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris Anderson, this is that money. These are non-Medicaid eligible. These HIV drugs go to non-Medicaid eligible individuals in this particular plan. And we will have a balance, unused money, of about $3.6 million. And the question is, for you all, you know, we have put it in the rebalance. If it doesn't stay in the rebalance, it rolls forward into the next biennium. It does not affect the treatment for the balance of this biennium.
But how does it affect the treatment in the next biennium for this population?
That's in the budget.
Chairman,
it will be in the budget.
It's in the budget.
Senator Moniz Anderson, it is in the budget. There's money budgeted for the next biennium. This would be an additional amount there. It would be extra just beyond what's in the government's recommended budget.
So essentially this is like savings that could stay in the account and go forward, but we'd have to borrow the money to pay interest to cover it, or we can use the savings and then, but there's no intention at cutting back on the program next biennium. So it's general fund money that is available.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, it's really drug rebate money that we use.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I didn't want to, just for the reference.
But some of that initially was general fund money and match money and rebates off those programs.
Yes. So
you're correct.
Yes.
Okay, Senator Carter, then Representative Hanson.
Can you tell me how much is the vital fee that how much is the total for that?
Senator Carter, the amount for the revenue from where is it?
$0.47.
I'm sorry, I turned my page.
Oh, got it.
Vital records was $0.47, a little under $500,000.
It's right here before my eyes.
Just and the medical marijuana revenue was $900,000.
Gotcha. Thanks.
And again, those are revenues that exist. They aren't going to be needed for the current biennium. Could roll forward.
I'm very clear on that. I was trying to look for money, so you and I have had this conversation.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. What we identified this morning, the $1.6 million problem in terms of long-term care. If we wanted to change this, what options are available to us at this meeting in terms of on a rebalance? If you want to change any of the individual categories or something, what?
Okay.
I'm seeing a lot of head shaking from people that have been here a long time.
We balance in front of us. You start picking it apart, we'll be here until September.
Okay.
But I
understand we have to borrow. We have to borrow more. I mean,
yeah.
But
do you want?
We don't want.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to respond to that?
I think so. I like to.
I'll be brief.
Sure. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hanson, if, for example, you did not want to use this drug rebate money, this particular issue would require a general fund, additional general fund appropriation. It's a little different than what we were talking about this morning, which is the fact that we have some potential fees that may be in question. Regardless of whether those fees, well, if those fees were to be collected, and I'm talking about the nursing facility provider fees of $1.6 million, they would be collected after the end of the biennium. The rebalance already includes a general fund appropriation to take care of the cash flow, of which that $1.6 is part of the issue. So if it were decided through a statutory change or a court decision, for example, that the department did not have the authority to collect those $1.6 million, then the department would revert about $1.6 million of that general fund loan, if you will, less. The problem here is that this is cash already in hand. It's a balance that would have to be replaced with an additional general fund appropriation if it were to be excluded from this rebalance plan. And Mr. Chair, if I may, a couple of comments about this, if I can, on the rebates issue.
Okay.
And I don't want to skip too far ahead. We took this particular adjustment very seriously because we took seriously the concerns of public health officials saying that we have some potential risk in this caseload. They were concerned about the impact, as Mr. Weeks said, of the Medicare Modernization Act. They were concerned about a rising caseload for a number of reasons and higher costs in this program. And they had hoped to use this $3.2 million as a reserve or a hedge against some of that risk. As I wrote in my analysis, we believe that there is some validity to those concerns about these risks. However, we convened a special meeting of public health folks. We had DHS finance folks there to try and fully vet the issue, to get clear understanding of what those caseload risks were, to quantify them, and we didn't get that information. So in the end, we have concluded that, or I've concluded that there is some risk here, but that the money is needed now, and in the future, if this caseload or the cost were to rise significantly, it could be another rebalance issue into the 0507 biennium, or the department could seek a general fund from the emergency fund if it is a critical need. So that's it.
Thank you. Senator Carter, Senator Bates.
When I called Mr. Weeks regarding fees and other dollars, we were looking under the hedges for money, as you know. To me, the issue becomes in looking strictly at the numbers. Strictly at the numbers. This money reverts into general fund activity. Whether there are increased caseloads or not, organizations would have to come back to the emergency board for those dollars. And it's a matter of the immediacy of the issue, or in the event there is a need to rebalance, e-board meets during the interim to take care of those matters. Now, and maybe I'm being a little simplistic about it, and I'm open in listening to everybody here. I'm open to listening to that. But if it's general fund dollars today, regardless to there not being a need at the moment, versus general fund dollars tomorrow when there is an emergency need, what's the difference? Because we'd have to go back and get those dollars out anyway. So maybe it's a principal issue for the organizations. I don't know, and I don't mean to take this so lightly, so please know that I'm not being flippant about it. But they'd have to come back to the emergency board if these dollars were not there.
Just my views are very similar to hers, a little bit different. A rebalance is an opportunity, especially when you're closing the biennium out. You look through your accounts, and you're looking at a situation where you've estimated what you think you needed for that program. You put money into it, or money came into it. And when you do your rebalance, you've got to shift money back and forth between different accounts to make things balance up. That's exactly what you do. That's why it's called a rebalance. Okay. We're going to do a reshoot here pretty quick, hopefully, and that reshoot will include programs like this and many others that we don't know caseload in or cost of caseload, and they're going to give us their best estimates in all these different programs what that reshoot should look like, including the HIV programs. We'll again make our best estimate for the next 2 years. E-Board will meet on a regular basis to review that and do rebalances as necessary and hopefully not require extra funds to make those rebalances. We've been lucky it's not been happening because they've been doing a reasonable job overall in their estimations. And in 2 years from now, we'll be facing the same thing, which is appropriate. We'll be facing the same thing. It's appropriate that we're doing this. This is why you have rebalances, because you cannot predict in an organization this big exactly where you'll have more than you need and less than you need. You know how much money will come in or won't come in. You know what kind of rebates you'll get or you won't get. You know what your caseloads are going to be like, the cost of those caseloads. This is not in a situation where you're saying if you don't spend it, you lose it. This is a situation where you can't completely predict what's going on. So taking this money, putting it back in, and covering it right now is appropriate, knowing we're going to reshoot, knowing that things may change in the future. And I do by this program for almost everyone you look at.
Okay. Thank you. We're okay.
Relatively complicated or complex answer to a fairly simple question.
That'll teach you.
Don't mess with it.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, the last area on the rebounds is for department-wide support services, all the operations for the department. The first item deals with PricewaterhouseCoopers. We have a contract with PricewaterhouseCoopers for actuarial services relating to all the medical programs. They're looking at revising capitation rates and developing capitation rates for new programs, and they prepare special reports. But the demands for that work have gone up, and those have been the costs. And so we have about $430,000 of additional cost for services from Pricewaterhouse that we're balancing out in this rebalance. We have a shortfall in the next item in some SSI recoveries and public health other fund grants. These are grants that we expected to get. We didn't actually get. And so we've got about $1.28 million that we have to rebalance to for the shortfall in some of these recoveries, below what we estimated to you in November at our last rebalance. The next item, temporary financing charges. These are the interest charges that we anticipate from the state treasurer for the, I've been saying loan, and Vic, I think, has corrected me here and say I should be talking about a line of credit that we have. We have a line of credit from the treasury. We've drawn $45 million of it for May. We have to include in this rebalance the cost of borrowing that money, which is about $120,000, is what we'll owe the Treasury. That's our estimate from Treasury for borrowing the money in May, and hopefully you will advance us the money so we don't have to borrow any more money from them. It runs about $4,000 a day to borrow $45 million, if you were thinking about borrowing money like that. That's at 4%. We probably couldn't get it at that. So that's what's in that category. And then the next is somewhat related. We pay Treasury charges for balances that are in suspense accounts. Suspense accounts exist all throughout the bank. They have no balance. Money comes into them, and we pay out of them. We have no money to put into them now, so Treasury deposits into it for us. And we have to pay an interest charge for that, too. Hopefully, we're going to get away from all of this if we can get agreement on, you know, this rebalance and put this behind us. So the very last item is an $8 million general fund increase. And this has to do with the prorate costs. DWSS, Department-Wide Social Services, or Support Services, gets money from feds. It's on a prorate basis. That's their share of the federal funds. We used to do that on, and as I said, a prorate. Now we have a federally approved cost allocation plan. That cost allocation plan didn't result in us being eligible to collect as much federal dollars to support DWSS as we thought it would. And the result is we have to rebalance with some general fund. So that's what that's all about. Now, hopefully, we'll be more familiar with the new cost allocation plan in the next biennium, and we'll come closer to estimating the federal dollars that can go into department-wide support services. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the plan, and we're happy to. We did follow up with Senator Winters on information for her about the relative foster care. You remember she asked, and I'm sorry she's not here, but we have provided her that information too. So.
Okay, are there questions? Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Britton can help with this as well. On page 2 of your narrative, when you talk about
our narrative?
Yes.
Okay.
This piece.
The agency.
Or maybe it's the agency request letter. I'm sorry. Of the $77.8 million, $13 million is what is needed in the general fund piece, and the sum of the tobacco tax and provider tax is $64.8. Can you tell me what those totals are independently, tobacco and provider? Can you break that out?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hannah, I can't off the top of my head. I don't know if Vic can or not.
Mr. Chair, Vic Todd, Assistant Director for Finance and Policy. I don't have that detail with me, but we can get that for you in terms of the breakdown.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
The reason I, you know, as I look at this, provider tax is new, but tobacco tax is not. And it would be nice to see what the history of this request is in terms of tobacco tax. You know, historically, where are we? Because eventually, in my mind, you finally come to a point where you say, how much cash flow does it take to fund this? Mm-hmm. In other words, we've got a history of this. Here's what keeps happening. And rather than do this back and forth or the line of credit, you begin to develop a cash flow model that says, here's how we handle this on our own and not do this.
Mr. Chair, may I respond?
Please do.
Members and Representative Hanna, I was going to make some remarks about this cash flow issue when we get to our recommendations. This afternoon, Sheila and I were looking at that very issue. I think this problem first arose 2 years ago, and it was somewhat masked at the time because there was unscheduled general fund in the budget, a significant amount of unscheduled general fund. And the cash flow situation was able to be solved by simply rescheduling the general fund. That general fund, in turn, reverted. The magnitude of the problem at that point in time with tobacco tax only was on the order, and Sheila, correct me, please, on the order of about $24 million. So it has grown significantly as tobacco tax has grown, and then again the provider taxes were introduced during this last biennium. When Sheila and I were talking, she said, you know, I think long ago when I worked at the Department of Administrative Services, the tobacco tax may have been budgeted on a cash basis. That was not the case for the additional tobacco tax that was generated during the third special session of 2002, nor was it the case when it came to provider taxes. In fact, the discussion as to the difference between cash provider taxes and tobacco taxes and accrued never occurred, to my recollection, at all. At the same time, my guess is that if an LFO analyst had pointed that out, I would have had my head taken off because everybody wanted the maximum amount of revenue, which is coming from an accrued amount rather than a cash amount, in order to fund the programs that they wanted to have funded. So,
okay. Follow-up question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, my follow-up probably still is, I'd like to see what the breakout between the two is,
okay,
because I think over time we'd want to study that history.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hanna, we'll get you the breakout.
Okay, Representative Hanson.
This might be a good area for us to examine through some directions of the budget note when we get to their full budget. And maybe
that's true.
That's one of them right here.
All right. Are there other questions regarding the testimony and the public testimony portion of this meeting? If not, I mean, we'll terminate this, go into a work session, then we'll discuss the actual rebalance bill and its components. Senator Carr.
The finance people. It appears to me that over a period of time that it falls on the back of Representative Hanna's question, even though I understand why this, every now and then when you get into a situation where you need to borrow money. And so I understand that. But when you look at the whole issue of projections, do you think that you guys have all of the tools that you need in order to make the kind of projections that are necessary to keep us out of this kind of a situation?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carr, I think we have developed better tools in the last 6 months than we've ever had before because we've built a forecasting group that we use the positions that we carved out. They didn't necessarily come to you for new positions during the buy-in. We asked for them next buy-in. But we have brought together a group of people who are really experienced in doing this. We've used LFO.
of them. We have a group of outside forecasting people, professional forecasters, university systems and other places to help us validate our forecast. So I think we've gotten much better about this and much more rigorous in the computations we have. They will always be a forecast, and I think our job is to get them as accurate as we possibly can and to use people both inside the agency and external to the agency. I mean, I liken it to the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. You know, your economist has came here quarter after quarter with bad news and, you know, probably wouldn't have been around had it not been for the fact that, he had an economic advisory group that was supporting all of his work. I mean, Kompetowski is very good, and yet he draws on people from banking and industry to help him. I'm trying to create for the department the same kind of thing in a forecasting group so that we have the support for our forecast that Kompetowski has for his economic forecast.
And I think it was well considered.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think you were unable to attend one session, but we asked Tom Kompetowski to come, and he came with the legislative economist as well, Paul Warner. And both were talking about this work that we've been doing to try to improve our forecasting. And I think both of them said, well, the economic forecast is difficult. The forecasting of caseloads and costs amongst human beings is even more difficult.
Right, so, that could get a little looser.
So I think we've gotten better, and we have the tools to get even better, Senator.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, the reason I was asking this question, because we've been trying, this department has brought to us session after session, a need to have the kind of technology that would allow them to do what they need to do instead of doing something so manually, and I'm not so sure that we have given you all that you need for the technology that you need to move as fast as you need for it to move, and that's really the basis of my question.
Okay. And Senator Carter and Mr. Chairman, I think on the technology side, there still may be some development that we need to work on. I was speaking to the expertise, the forecasting expertise, which I think we've assembled both internal to the department and external experts. Whether we're able to generate from our system, you know, using technology, the information is something we probably still continue to look at. So.
Certainly we do, because in your letter you mentioned that maybe 8 months or longer and delayed getting data.
Right.
Along.
That's exactly right.
And see, and that's my comment. No agency your side, at your size, having the kind of labor-intensive community of people working and where you have to make forecasts that you really can't determine unless, you know, you can do a little better in terms of when our economy goes down, you know that what's going to happen, you're going to have more people come into the system. So you know that, and you can anticipate that. But how do you anticipate it in terms of the number of caseloads that you're going to have? You can't do that. And so if you don't have the kind of technology that kind of goes into the system and gives you that data, it would appear to me that that has something to do with you not being able to adjust to the kind of caseload needs that you do.
Thank you. Senator Bates.
I just want to make this clear in everyone's mind, including mine. We're talking about two different things here. You're talking about getting forecasting as tight as you can. I'd point out that your overall forecast for this biennium was within a fraction of 1% of being correct overall. You might be able to tighten things up inside the agency if we had to move things around with various rebalances, but your overall forecasting was excellent.
That's right.
The problem you've got here, if you want to call it a problem even, is that you've accrued taxes and income, but you haven't collected them yet because of the nature of the cycle you're dealing with. So if you want to solve, quotation marks, this problem, which some businesses do not consider a problem, but which you can think of as a problem, you'd have to develop a fund, in this case, for about $78 million, which you would hold back, not spend. And when you finish the 05 biennium, you would have that. You start the next biennium, you'd have money coming in, taxes collected, that had been accrued in the previous biennium, and you'd be rolling forward. So it's really an amount a matter of what kind of an accounting system you want to be on, whether you want to be on an accrual system or not. Mm-hmm. It is not uncommon for businesses to have, correctly, a line of credit which you draw upon, not get loans from, and that's part of the cost of doing that is considered a cost of doing business. Many of us like the cash system for two reasons. One, it's easier to understand, and secondly, you're not drawing from your line of credit to keep your cash flow going. Okay, that's a policy decision to make. And if you do make that policy decision, you have to set some money aside, though, because when you convert from accrual back to cash, you're going to have that cash on hand for your cash flow.
Mm-hmm. It's a one-time expense.
Yeah.
The first time, whatever that first time was, we spent more than we got in during the biennial period, and then we're always going to be behind.
Not quite that easy. You did accrue the money. You just didn't get it. It took me 10 years in my business to figure it out and for my accountant beat it into my head that it's not a bad thing to do. But it's a question of what's the most efficient way of handling your money. In many businesses, for the accrual basis, it's better.
You get taxed on it even though
you're
Harrison Henson. I have no doubt that if we move to a cash system, if we ever got into the same type of situation we were in during the five special sessions, we would use that cash buildup and shift back to the accrual system, accrual method, in order to create extra money to get us through the true budget emergencies that we were dealing with. So I don't know how much time and effort you spend on it, because it's only going to be a permanent fix for the next 2 years.
Further comments before we end this public session, go into work session.
Representative
Hannah.
I was going to say to Dr. Bates.
I know. I felt like arguing.
The reason it would be difficult for him to understand that, because his accountant was explaining why he was paying the income tax on that accrued income before he ever had the money in his hand.
Yeah, and that's what we didn't do.
A little different situation.
That's why we're on a cash basis.
Okay.
Right. Without further burning commentary, we will go ahead and close this public session and open a work session on House Bill 5077. Thank you, gentlemen, for information you provided for us. Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like, if you would please, to have you turn to page 11 of the LFO analysis, and this will provide you with some, with our summary LFO recommendations. Page 11. And I will run down through them. In general, we are recommending that the subcommittee approve the appropriation and expenditure limitation adjustments requested to implement the DHS rebalance plan with three changes. First, we recommend that you not approve $49,261 general fund, $49,260 federal funds, 12 positions, 0.96 FTE that was requested in the plan that we got from the department for the presumptive Medicaid disability determination team in SPD. As I've noted in our analysis, the department remove that part of the request after they had submitted this letter and were willing to make that recommendation. The general fund savings will reduce the amount of additional general fund needed to cover cash flow issues, and we'll get to that in just a second. Second, there is a related other funds and federal funds in the department-wide support services that are related to these 12 positions in SPD. That amounts to $48,552 of other funds, $48,552 federal funds expenditure limitation, and we are recommending that we not add that either. The third recommendation is to appropriate $77,718,040 general fund dollars to address cash flow issues with provider and tobacco tax revenues. This is $49,261 less than requested by the agency, reflecting the reduction for savings from recommendation one above. And the chart that's in the middle of the page shows you the changes to general fund, to other funds, federal funds, total funds, and to FTE as well.
Senator Carter.
Mr. Britton, can you tell me what's the impact of not having the FTEs that has been requested, especially in light of the possibility of the Medicaid Modernization Act coming into place at least by January of 2006?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carter, the agency, the reason, as I understood it from the agency, that they had pulled this part of their request or asked that we remove it is that they did not believe they could hire 12 people to fill those positions within the waning months or the waning weeks of this current biennium. However, as noted in our analysis, and I think Mr. Weeks testified to this morning, that this will likely be a reshoot item for the next biennium. Okay. So there may be a request put in with the governor's revised budget that includes positions for this particular job.
Mr. Chairman, I just think that it was important to let the record show that, reflect that, so that since we won't be in regular session and the E-Board is in charge, this was pre-programmed or pre-planned in terms of their needs to accommodate that act.
Thank you. Record so noted.
We also are recommending that the subcommittee adopt two budget notes. They are at the bottom of the page. The first has to do with the cash flow issues that we were talking about a moment ago. The Department of Administrative Services and the Department of Human Services are directed to consider various alternatives to alleviate DHS cash flow problems stemming from the use of provider taxes and tobacco taxes within the agency's budget. The two departments shall report to the emergency board by June 2006 with their findings and recommendations. What we're thinking here is not so much an expectation that either department will come up with some brainstorm, painless way to solve this cash flow problem. There are no such things, at least that I'm aware of. To solve the cash flow problem, you obviously need cash, either a one-time infusion to take care of this problem once and for all. You need to cut programmatic expenditures. That's another alternative. You conceivably could have providers speed up their payments, or you could have some combination of all three. No matter which alternative you make, though, it's not without its pain. So I'm not looking for some creative, wonderful, painless solution, but I think a discussion of this to keep this issue visible is an important one for the emergency board to have. So that's the basis of this particular budget note. The second budget note is very similar to one that we had 2 years ago in the rebalance that we did 2 years ago for the department. The Department of Human Services is directed to review the procedures it uses to forecast, budget, and account for other funds and federal funds revenue and to present a report on its findings and recommendations to the emergency board at the time of the agency's first 2005-07 biennial budget rebalance. In this particular rebalance, there were particularly issues around other fund revenues and, as it turned out, non-revenues within the seniors and people with disabilities cluster. 2 years ago, it had to do with mental health other funds revenues. And we think that the department has attempted to work through these issues. We've been involved with their efforts. We've looked at other funds' revenue trackers, and yet we still think that we have a ways to go on this, and we believe that this is an important thing to report on as far as the emergency board is concerned. I would turn it over to Sheila if you have any additional comments to make. We also, Mr. Chair, have copies of the conceptual amendment to House Bill 5077 for you to see. Mr. Chair, if you'd like to have the subcommittee approve those recommendations or discuss them, that's certainly what we could do at this point. And then I think Ms. Baker can walk us through this bill, if you'd like. But we can do that first, whatever works.
Thank you, Chair.
Are you looking for a motion?
We find a motion relating to
the LFO recommendations
and the budget notes.
Mr. Chair, I would move acceptance of the LFO recommendations and budget notes with move the recommendation and budget notes.
Okay.
Then I'm assuming then they're
House Bill Fund
incorporated in the 577.
And we can review that for you all. Okay. Representative Hansen moves the acceptance of the LFO recommendations and budget notes into House Bill 5077. Any objection? Hearing none. So, okay, next item.
Sheila, would you like to go through the sections, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what you have in front of you are conceptual amendments. At the time, if this bill passes out of subcommittee, the actual amendments will be done and will go to whatever full either joint committee, House, or Senate committee that deals with it next. But the conceptual amendments are set up in such a way that Section 1 relates to the additional general fund appropriation, the $77,718,040, to address the cash flow issue on the provider tax and the tobacco tax. And so you can see the appropriation there and the allocation to health services and to seniors and people with disabilities. And then Section 2 is the more typical pluses and minuses in the various budget appropriations for the department. The general fund pluses and minuses add up to a net zero. There is a overall reduction of other and federal funds there, and those numbers match up to the numbers that are on the page 11 chart. I would note that these numbers do not include the non-limited federal fund increases for WIC and food stamps, because statutorily in the budget bill last time there was language that said those expenditures were not limited. So although those amounts are increasing, they're still not limited, and so there is no statutory change to that in these amendments. And then Section 3 is the emergency clause, and it provides that the act would take effect on its passage so that it would be effective for the 03-05 budget period.
Okay, any questions on the conceptual amendments?
The only question reaches my mind, this would normally go to full Ways and Means and then into the floors for passage, I'd assume. We are in a little different situation right now. What's the time sequence for the agency as far as needing this passed into law to take care of the cash flow problem? Do we have a problem here with this?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, we, in a sense, have a problem. Remember that they have established a line of credit, so they are able to pay their bills. By adopting this measure, the Assembly would be essentially giving them a short-term loan to cover this, and they would pay back, or I presume eliminate their line of credit, and be able to continue operations and to pay their bills. So in that sense, there is no speed necessary here. On the other hand, remember that we're accruing interest charges every day to the tune of about $4,000 a day. So there, I mean,
I think it's a speed issue.
I agree.
That's my point. So obviously we're going to pass this out today. Where it goes from here is the next question. We can't take it full.
Right, but that's not true. They're working on that. So I think an appropriate motion would be to either the full or the House or Senate Budget Committee.
As appropriate.
Yeah.
And House Committee.
Thank you. That, I guess the way it's, can I make that motion?
We're ready for a motion on conceptual amendments.
Hope I get this right for you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, could I interrupt? And Sheila, please correct me. I think what we're looking for here is a referral to the full Joint Ways and Means Committee. Okay. Now, if the House has to take this up and the Senate has to take this up, it's separate committees, we will choose bills, we'll get blank bills, and stuff them with the guts of this particular bill, with House 5077. But for now, I think the referral should be to the full Joint Ways and Means Committee.
There you go.
Thank you for the direction. Mr. Chair, then I would move, as conceptually amended, House Bill 5077 to the Joint Full Ways and Means Committee.
Well, first, we have the amendment. And so Senator Bates moves the conceptual amendments to House Bill 577 as it's been described.
Do it faster sometime.
Any objection?
None.
Hearing none. 5077 has been amended with the conceptual amendments, and we've accepted the recommendations and the budget notes. Now we're prepared to have a motion on House Bill 577 as amended to the full Joint Committee Voice Meeting.
So moved.
So moved.
Senator Bates has moved House Bill 5077 as amended to the full Joint Committee on Ways and Means. I don't know, normally we'd call roll.
Clerk will call roll.
Are you prepared? Clerk will call the roll.
Carter?
Aye, aye.
Westland? Winter?
Bates? Aye.
Monahan?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Hanna?
Aye.
Carrigan?
Aye. Okay, House Bill 5077, as amended, has been passed. We'll go to the full Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and I will go ahead and carry it. So we'll see how it, where I carry it to, but we won't carry it too far.
Mr. Chair, I just want to tell you that Senator Westland, we have double committees. There's another committee that's going on where I was, too, and I forgot about this one. So Senator Bates, Senator Westland is in that committee. And so that's why I was late coming here, because I was in that committee as well.
That's fine. Is there any other matters before we adjourn?
Before we adjourn, Mr. Chair, I'd like to tell you. Before we adjourn, Mr. Chair, I will tell you that I'd be very happy to have this committee meeting again in about a week.
I think we all would. We all would. We're looking forward to that time.
So, Mr. Chair, we will not be meeting then on Monday, I assume.
And unless the co-chairs advise us otherwise, we will not be reconvening this committee, or until the co-chairs advise us otherwise.
So, Mr. Chair, I think it would be appropriate in the event this committee does not get to work together again until renegotiations take place, we give kudos to Gary Weeks and give thanks for his long years of service to the state of Oregon, and even though we're a little disappointed that he's leaving us, but at the same time bid him a great adieu in his new life to come in the state of Washington.
So you agree with that, except don't leave till after the reshoot.
Absolutely.
Can I get that reshoot lined up, Mr. Chairman? I think he wants to leave before the reshoot.
I wouldn't blame
it. It's a question of who will be in the target of that reshoot. Okay. Without further comments, we will be adjourned. Thank you, everyone.